the foundation of entrepreneurship, committed to expanding human welfare through economic growth, on the web at kauffman.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is an election special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last night, President-elect Barack Obama touched briefly on the history of the moment, then turned his attention to the challenges he inherits come January. An economy in crisis, wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, a battered U.S. image overseas.
The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there.
As a candidate, Senator Obama rode a wave of voter frustration to a comprehensive victory at the polls. Many voters responded to his promise of change. Change has come to America, he said, and with it, the hope of a better day. So if this is a new beginning, what begins? What ends? We have split lines today. McCain supporters can call us at 800-344-3893. Again, for Republicans, 800-344-3893. Obama backers, 800-344-3864. Again, that's 800-344-3864 for Obama backers. Exit polls tell us the economy was the most important issue on voters' minds. A bit later, we'll talk with pollster Andy Kohut about who won where and why. But first, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us. And Ken, we'll get to the big night for congressional Democrats in a minute and undecided races. But from the beginning, Barack Obama vowed to do two things in this campaign: to expand the electorate, to get a lot of people to vote who never did before, and expand the map, to put Republicans on the defensive by making them fight for states that they'd come to take for granted.
And he did both, and he did both amazingly successfully. He only got 52% of the vote, not a popular vote landslide, but an electoral college landslide. 349 electoral votes as we speak, not including North Carolina, which he may ultimately pull out and win. But the fact is that with all that money, with all those the registration of new voters, with the excitement of electorate, with lines around the block, he picked up states that haven't voted Democratic in decades. Virginia, not since 1964. Indiana, since 1964. Missouri is still too close to call, which is pretty remarkable. Florida, another state. It was early on in the evening. Once Barack Obama won Pennsylvania, that was really the blue state that that John McCain really hoped to get. And once he took Ohio, then people said, well, it's just a matter of time. And it became a matter of time. We just started counting the things. I just want to say one thing, though. We spent the last night spending all these hours going over House races and counties and bellwether counties and not really getting a real grasp. It wasn't until this morning when I had like 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And it suddenly, it came to me the enormity of what happened, the sea change of what happened yesterday. It's not just states that have gone from red to blue, but it's just people's opinions, their attitudes. It just seemed to change in a blink of an eye.
There were an awful lot of people who voted for the Republican candidate and not for that kind of change. Obviously, he was campaigning for change as well. Nevertheless, take us back 2 years. We had an ongoing argument within the Democratic Party between Rahm Emanuel, then running the Democratic Congressional Committee, and Howard Dean, the Democratic National Committee chairman. Howard Dean wanted to run a 50-state strategy to put money in unlikely places like Montana and the Dakotas and Alaska, of all places, to build the party up. While Rahm Emanuel said, we have a real chance to win control of Congress this year. We need to focus on races where we can win.
And both actually were correct. Rahm Emanuel said they have a chance of winning control of Congress in 2006, and they did so. They toppled a longtime Republican incumbents, longtime Republican held districts in 2006. But Howard Dean say, look, it's not just the 14 states we keep competing in every year. John Kerry will and Al Gore competed in these 14 states. You have to broaden the electorate. You have to broaden the map. And so we saw in special elections in Congress, Democrats winning congressional seats in Mississippi, in Louisiana, Denny Hastert's seat in Illinois. There were a lot of expanding of the electorate, and both plans, the Emanuel position and the Howard Dean position, came to fruition last night.
A lot of argument for nothing.
That's right. And of course, Rahm Emanuel reports say that he has been named or has been offered the position as chief of staff to Barack Obama, which is interesting because Emanuel was never a big Obama supporter. He's actually stayed on the sidelines because he had loyalty to Hillary Clinton as well.
He was, of course, in the White House as an advisor to Bill Clinton in 12 years ago. Anyway, as we go back over this, there's still some races to be decided. You mentioned North Carolina and Missouri still out in the presidential campaign, and there's a number of Senate races that have yet to be decided.
Right. There's four in the Senate, and Minnesota is one of them. Nearly 3 million votes have been cast. Right now, Norm Coleman, the incumbent Republican, has a 727-vote lead. That is an automatic recount. He's going against a comedian, a Democrat, Al Franken. There was a third-party candidate, Dean Barkley, who got 15% of the vote. That is an automatic recount. That may not be decided until December, although Republicans have already congratulated Coleman for winning re-election. In Georgia, you need Saxby Chambliss, the first-term Republican, does have the most votes, but you need a majority. State law in Georgia says you have to have a majority. Right now, Chambliss is down to 49.8% of the vote, and that means it will go to a December 2nd runoff with Democrat Jim Martin. That was a surprise. A lot of people thought that this Chambliss would be able to eke out a victory. Obviously, the African-American vote was crucial in Georgia. In Alaska, 96% of the vote in, as we speak. Ted Stevens, remember him? The convicted on seven felony counts,
like 2 weeks before election.
Exactly. 84 years old, the longest serving Republican in the history of the Senate. He's up by 3,400 votes, maybe 98% of the vote in. There's still 40,000 absentee votes left to be counted, but a lot of people say that he could actually win. Now, remember John McCain, Sarah Palin, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, all said that Ted Stevens should resign and resign immediately. It's possible, here we go with these theories here, but it's possible that Ted Stevens could win and then be forced to resign and resign. And what's the woman from Alaska? What's her,
There's Governor Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin could theoretically run in a special election, and she can come to Washington and torment all the Democrats who, have been tormenting her this election. Finally, in Oregon, only 3/4 of the vote has counted so far. As you know, in Oregon, it's a male-only ballot, so obviously women cannot vote in Oregon because it's male-only. I've used that joke 12 times on this show. Gordon Smith has a slight lead, 48% to 46% of the vote. 62,000 votes in Oregon is taken by a third-party candidate. If Gordon Smith loses to Jeff Merkley, it was a third-party conservative who cost him his victory, but right now he has a slight lead.
And let's see if we can, we'll be bringing you up to date on those, but there could be weeks before we know the outcome here.
That's absolutely true, and that's certainly the case in Georgia. Remember, the last time this happened, White Fowler in 1992 had a lead in the Georgia Senate race, but didn't get a majority. They went to a December runoff, and the Republican, Coverdale, won that seat. So you know that if the Democrats have this momentum, if they have the wind in their sails in December, there are going to be tons of money thrown into that runoff in Georgia.
We want to get some callers in on this conversation. Again, McCain supporters, give us a call, 800-344-3893. Obama backers, 800-344-3864. And let's go to the phones. This is Mike. Mike with us from Milwaukee in Wisconsin on the Republican line. Excuse me, on the Democratic line. I apologize.
Yes. Hi, Ken and Neil, and thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to say very quickly that this was the triumph of the rational decision-making of candidates like Barack Obama, who are thoughtful, intelligent, cautious, and they listen to people who don't agree with them and are reflective as well, over the sub-rational decision-making of presidents like President Bush, who looked into the eyes of a former KGB agent and had a gut feeling that this guy would be a close friend. But also of Senator John McCain, who had a gut feeling about Senator Palin and said that that's my vice president, instead of rationally and very adequately vetting her. But also, too, his rather impulsive as well as a gut feeling selection of sub-rational selection of Joe the plumber. If he was vetted properly, he would have found out that Joe didn't even have a plumber's license. And if I could say very quickly, I'm somewhat dismayed at Joe the Plumber, too, for his lack of ambition and falsely identifying himself. Well, he didn't have a doctor's license. He may as well call himself Joe the Doctor. Thank you very much.
All right, Mike. Thanks very much for the call. And it's subrational. That's Mike's way of characterizing it. Yet we're hearing some analyses today, Ken, that the McCain campaign lurched from issue to issue, made some mistakes, including the selection of Governor Palin as vice presidential candidate, excited the base, but cost them a lot of votes in the center.
Well, if the goal was to win independent and disaffected Democrats, obviously Sarah Palin didn't do that. But at the same time, John McCain knew from the beginning he had to build up his base among the conservatives who never trusted him to begin with. And the thought, of course, at the time was Sarah Palin. One thing about Mike's call, though, that is exactly right. I've never seen a flawless campaign as I saw with Barack Obama. He just never made a mistake, never lost his cool, and just took everything as it came, and it just showed it last night.
Well, let's get to the Republican line now. This is Josh, and Josh is with us from Woodbury in Minnesota.
Hi, I just wanted to say how important I think it is that, I mean, I was I voted for McCain, and I think it's important that we, instead of worrying about, I mean, McCain said it himself in his concession speech, instead of worrying about who won or who lost, now the teams are dissolved. We don't have teams anymore. Now we're all Americans again. And so we need to work together regardless of who we voted for. And I guess the only concern that I would have, and one of the concerns about President-elect Obama, is that he backed himself into a corner with the promises he made about Iraq and may make some policy decisions that aren't that won't respect the lives of the troops that have been lost and the time that the troops have spent and their dedication.
We have yet to see President-elect Obama will do about the situation in Iraq. The United States is in the process of negotiating a status of forces agreement with the government in Iraq. If it should be ratified before he takes office on January 20th, it would, well, to some degree, tie his hands in terms of the outer limit of an American withdrawal. He would want to withdraw perhaps more quickly than that. But quickly, Ken, what can you say but a gracious speech last night by Senator McCain?
Both McCain and Obama gave very, very gracious speeches, but I suspect that the pragmatism of Barack Obama will come through in his promises about Iraq and spending and taxes. I suspect there'll be some changing from the campaign rhetoric to what actually happens in the early days of his administration.
Thanks very much for the call, Josh.
Thank you.
And again, we're asking McCain supporters to call us at 800-344-3893. Obama backers at 800-344-3864. Ken is going to stay with us. When we come back from a short break, we'll be joined by Andrew Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press, as we continue to talk about who won, where, and why. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's a day after election special from NPR News.
WI Law programs are made possible in part by Bevere Cafe 2, offering gourmet sandwiches, salads, and specialty coffees with seating inside or outside in the lower courtyard of the Institute for Genomic Biology next to Morrow Plots on the U of I campus. WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Truppen at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan for State of Illinois employees and is accepting new patients. More information is available at 356-3736.
This is an election special from NPR News, the day after. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senator John McCain made what may have been one of the most difficult speeches of his life last night. Speaking in Phoenix, he conceded defeat to his Democratic rival and commended him on his historic victory.
In a contest as long and difficult as this campaign has been, his success alone commands my respect for his ability and perseverance. But that he managed to do so by inspiring the hopes of so many millions of Americans who had once wrongly believed that they had little at stake or little influence in the election of an American president, is something I deeply admire and commend him for achieving.
Republican presidential candidate John McCain in Phoenix last night. Today, we're looking at what happened yesterday in the campaign for president and in Congress. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us. We want to hear from you. If this is a new beginning, what begins and what ends? We have split lines today. We are asking Obama backers to call 800-344-3864, McCain supporters 800-344-3893. And joining us now is Andrew Kohut, a director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. He's with us here in Studio 3A. And a late night for you too, Andy. We thank you very much for coming in today.
Happy to be here.
And what John McCain just said in that tape cut spoke to Barack Obama's success in expanding the electorate. A lot of people wondered, how big was the black turnout going to be? How big was the youth turnout going to be?
Well, the black turnout went from 11% of the electorate 4 years ago. This time it was 13%. That's about a 20% boost. That's very substantial. 19% of African Americans were first-time voters. Only 8% of whites were first-time voters. There was a lot going on with African Americans, and they voted heavily, much more heavily for Obama than they did for Kerry. The youth vote is a bit of a puzzle. We find about the same percentage of young voters. I think it was 17% this time as 4 years ago. But, of course, there was increased youth turnout because we had historically high levels of turnout, but they were across the board. We really can't come to the conclusion, unless there's a problem with this exit poll, that young people turnout was disproportionately higher than elsewhere, or the rate of change was disproportionately greater. And that is somewhat of a surprise.
Given all the interest that we saw, particularly in the primaries.
Right. Well, and what they did do is they voted so heavily for Barack Obama, they are a real factor in his they're a factor of two things, in his election and a factor in the new distribution of the electorate. 4 years ago, the electorate divided about evenly Republican versus Democrat. In this election, 32% of the voters, according to the exit poll, thought of themselves as Republicans, dropped of 5, 40% Democrats, a big advantage for the Democrats, in part because this generation, this age cohort of young people, 18 to 30 and maybe a little bit more, they're very Democratic.
And a lot of Republicans worry that they have lost a generation. And the other also worry about Latinos, the other big ethnic group in this country, a bigger ethnic group than African Americans.
Well, they certainly lost Latinos. We saw them lose them in 2006. And Latinos voted more Democratic, at 15 percentage points more Democratic this time relative to 4 years ago. And the Latino vote and the African American vote was so heavily supportive of Barack Obama, it overcame the fact that whites still, on balance, voted for John McCain.
Ken, we're getting a lot of emails asking what happens to replace the two senators who won yesterday but will get new jobs, Joe Biden in Delaware and Barack Obama in Illinois.
Both Senate seats will stay Democratic. The governor of Illinois is Rod Blagojevich. Say that one time fast. He's a Democrat, and there is tremendous pressure on him to name an African American, Barack Obama being the only black in the Senate. Jesse Jackson Jr., the congressman, certainly is interested in the seat. He doesn't have the greatest relationship with Blagojevich. A possible name is Emil Jones, who is the state Senate majority leader. He's retiring. He is Barack Obama's mentor. He's African-American, 73 years old. He may be a caretaker for the seat, but he's a possibility as well. But anyway, that'll stay Democratic. Same on the in Delaware. Ruth Ann Minner is the Democratic governor there. She's term limited, retiring, but she will name a Democrat to replace Joe Biden. Biden is one of the, he obviously was up on the, he was reelected to a seventh term yesterday, and obviously he will step down. That's what happened to Lyndon Johnson in 1960, elected vice president and Senate at the same time, stepping down from a Senate seat.
And it was thought that Joe Biden's son might be there to replace him.
Right. Bo Biden, who is the state attorney general, but he's with the Army National Guard in Iraq. He doesn't come back until next October. And there's a possibility that either Minner will name a caretaker person or perhaps even somebody else like the lieutenant governor, the outgoing lieutenant governor, who would like to have the seat, but of course would not want to give it up. He would not want to be a caretaker. He'd like to hold it on beyond 2010 when Bo Biden hopefully returns from Iraq.
And here's an email question. This to Andy Kohut. Forget the first circular firing squad among Republicans. Now is the time for pollsters and analysts to take a look and figure out who got the statistics game right. After thousands of surveys, dozens of methodological arguments, and a pile of actual, you know, votes to look at, one thing seems clear. Most of the pollsters had the election mostly right. That doesn't mean that some of the principal controversies in polling, sampling of cell phone users, for example, have been sorted out. That from Seth Coulter.
Well, that's correct. I mean, the polls did a reasonably good job this time. They did the same good job they did 4 years ago and 8 years ago with close elections. The national polls have a good track record and pretty good methodology for dealing with presidential elections. Primaries are another thing, but certainly presidential elections, the turnout and many of the factors that we struggle with in this question, in this contest, race, the record speaks for itself. It was pretty good.
Ken?
I think one thing we hopefully will bury forever is the term Bradley effect. We heard that over and over again, voters saying they would vote for an African-American when they get into the privacy of a voting booth. They don't do that. But we've seen that basically the polling was pretty true to form. I think Obama was favored by 7 points. He won by maybe five. And that Bradley effect was perhaps an aberration in 1982 and nothing to talk about in the current stage of polling.
And it reflects the fact that race is less of an issue for the overwhelming majority of voters.
Especially among the young, right?
Among the young. We did see about 8% of the white vote saying they were considering race when they cast their ballot, and they voted very heavily for John McCain, 36% to 63%. But they were 8% of the vote, and they're mostly older, mostly white Southerners.
Let's get some more callers on the line, and let's go to Chuck. Chuck calling us from San Francisco on the Democratic line.
Thank you very much, and hi, everybody.
Hi, Chuck.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe what we're seeing here is a trend towards what's been called a postpartisan sort of situation, where some of the old categories and cliches really don't hold up. Specifically, what I mean is I was pretty surprised about the McCain campaign's reliance on some fairly predictable sort of old cliches about how his opponent was a socialist and he was going to raise your taxes and he was weak on defense and you know, his patriotism was questionable and his religion was questionable and all these things. I don't think that the country has become unpatriotic or decided, you know, they want to be socialistic or anything. But I'm wondering if now we're entering an era where the analysis is a little bit more nuanced, and the discussion is a little bit there's a little bit more information entering into the discussion, and this could be a consequence, in part at least, to the fact that communication technology has advanced to the point where the old kind of cliches just aren't effective anymore.
30-second ads aren't the only way to communicate. Andy Cohut, what do you
think? There's some evidence that these things really didn't work this time. More religious voters, Obama was accused of being godless and religiousless or secular, and religious voters voted more Democratic than they did 4 years ago by a significant margin. And one of the really interesting sidelights of this election was that while Obama was clearly said there was this question about how raising taxes, he carried 52 to 47% margin the $100,000 a year vote category. And I think one of my colleagues told me that the $200,000 a year category, which is very small, he also carried that. And he talked about raising taxes among people who $200,000 a year.
$250,000.
It's not... there were a lot of things that suggest the themes that were used just didn't fly.
Ken?
I suspect that one of the reasons that peripheral issues like the patriotism and the socialism arguments didn't work is because of the overwhelming concern about the future of the economy and everybody's personal finances. That plus the war in Iraq, I suspect, that drowned out the other issues that might have played in a different kind of elections atmosphere.
And to be fair, given the money disadvantage or the money advantage, depending on how you look at it, Republicans Republicans were stuck running pretty much negative advertising for the most part, while the Democrats could afford to run some negative ads and a lot of positive ads as well, so that they would appeal to voters on both sides.
And look where the battleground states were. They were all red states that President Bush won. Barack Obama carried every state that John Kerry won in 2004, including Pennsylvania, by a comfortable margin.
Chuck, thanks for the call.
Could I just ask, would you guys agree that this election, not only because of its duration, but other reasons, actually had a little bit more content to it? You know, actual information, detailed debate and discussion?
On the issues?
On the issues.
What do you think, Andy?
I'm going to pass on that one. I don't know how to answer that.
Ken?
I'd like to get a lifeline.
Chuck,
thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for the call. Let's see if we can go now to this is on the Republican line. Terry. Terry with us from Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
You know, one thing which is interesting to me, and I hope that not only the Republican Party, but everybody learns, is that Barack Obama and his ability to use media technology and media fundraising is the wave of the future, and the McCain campaign certainly fell very short and I think lost the boat on that. But my major issue is, or major concern, was that as a white male, you know, I was very concerned when I heard that people were thinking of the issue of the Bradley effect, because white voters wouldn't vote for Barack Obama strictly because of his race, and I was hoping that we could be above the race card in this day and age. And I think in some respects the opposite thing occurred, because looking at demographics this morning, I saw, I think the statistic was 96% of African Americans voted for Barack Obama. While certainly he had a great appeal, and in fact with the number of people who came out for this election, my feeling was that whoever won, it was truly the nation's decision, because so many people came out to vote. But I was concerned to see such a high percentage of African American voters voting for Barack Obama. It seems that the race card in some respects came out, and that they voted for him strictly based on race and not solely on issues.
Andy, what is the normal percentage of African Americans who would vote for a Democratic candidate, regardless of his race?
About 90%. I mean, I think that more African Americans did vote for Barack Obama, unquestionably, and more registered to vote, and more voted than in previous elections, record number. And it's not too surprising. This is a historic election, the first black candidate, major black candidate, African American. People tend to vote along their personal lines, especially groups that haven't experienced power. But what we can draw from this is that while we analysts worried that race would be a negative factor in this campaign, actually it was a positive because of the boost that that Obama got, not only from African Americans but from many whites who thought it was very important that an African American candidate be elected. I'm not saying they were voting for him purely along those lines, but that offsets that relatively small percentage of whites who said race was a factor and they went overwhelmingly for McCain. So I think in the end, race mattered, and it was probably more of a plus for Obama than a negative.
Terry, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to this is Guy, and Guy's with us in Portland, Oregon, on the Democratic line.
Thank you, and I wanted to thank all three of you for your assiduous and sometimes humorous analyses.
Well, it's Andy who's assiduous and Ken who's the other one. Anyway.
But I'm worried about another effect, and that's the Carter effect, and that the people that really run this country are going to marginalize President-elect Obama.
And who are the people who really run the country?
Well, the people that really run the money. And, you know, I think President Carter had a lot of good ideas, but was not allowed to really carry them out.
So you're concerned that this will be a one-term presidency and be deemed a failure? Well, certainly, I'm not sure how much of a honeymoon that Barack Obama can expect. He did win decisively last night. He can declare that he does have a mandate of some degree, Ken, but certainly the potshots are going to start coming very fast and furiously.
Well, except that there were so many overwhelming problems that it almost seemed too big for any one man or woman to deal with as a president. So I suspect suspect a honeymoon will be there, and I suspect that there will be efforts by both parties to at least coalesce behind some kind of a solution, perhaps on energy, then maybe later on you know, other things that are concerning Americans.
Fair amount of overlap on the two parties on energy.
But you know something, 2010 seems like a long time away, but it's tomorrow. It starts immediately. They're already, matter of fact, on CNN before, they said, well, a woman said, I don't know if Sarah Palin could be considered the front runner for 2012. I said, oh my God, we're not talking about 2012 yet. But I mean, obviously, there will be some kind of a honeymoon, some kind of effort to get things to both parties to work together. But you know, at some point, politics will take over.
Yeah, but one thing, we need health care. And I don't think there's not a lot of overlap
in the two parties on health care. Right. That's going to be a difficult one, especially with the financial situation the way it is. It's going to be expensive no matter which plan you looked at was going to be awfully expensive.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call, Guy. And here's an email question for Ken. This is from Diane in Intervale, New Hampshire. What's up with the Ted Stevens race?
Well, as we've said before, I mean, you know, with there's about 90, you know, some odd percent. He's still ahead by several thousand votes, and it's pretty remarkable. Perhaps it's the Sarah Palin effect. Perhaps it's the fact that in reality, no Democrat has been elected senator in Alaska since 1974. And Ted Stevens said, look, you know, I wasn't really convicted, or I was convicted by a corrupt jury or an unfair jury. And I think they bought it, which is very interesting. Don Young also, who was under FBI investigation, the congressman from Alaska, has a 52-46 point lead with not many votes to count it. So for the rest of the country, it was a Democratic year, but not in Alaska, it seems like.
We're looking at what happened yesterday, who won, where, and why. Our guest, of course, NPR political editor Ken Rudin and Andrew Kohut, who's the director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. They're both kind enough to be with us here in Studio 3A today. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we have split lines today. Republican McCain supporters, call 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Stay with us. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to a Day After Election special from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from T. Rowe Price, managing investments for the long term with a consistent, disciplined approach. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. From Yahoo Search, providing features like Search Scan with built-in McAfee protection designed to warn you of websites with hidden dangers. And from the Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
WILA programs are made possible by the Beckman Institute, whose Thursdays at 12:20 concert series features performances by members of the University of Illinois School of Music in the Beckman Institute atrium. The Beckman Institute Cafe is open for lunch during the concerts. Today's programming is made possible by the Courier Cafe, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Whether it's almond French toast for breakfast, garden fresh salads and homemade soups for lunch, or burgers and hand-dipped shakes for dinner, the Courier Cafe in downtown Urbana has been offering fresh choices for 28 years. Thank you.
This is an election special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. President-elect Barack Obama began work today to assemble a political transition team a day after he defeated Republican John McCain. President-elect Obama saw his two daughters off to school in Chicago, and got some exercise, and then got down to work. And voters in California approved a measure to ban gay marriage, overturning a state Supreme Court decision. Opponents vowed a legal challenge, with the city of San Francisco saying it would look into the validity of the ballot measure. Details on those stories and, of course, much more coming up later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow we'll bring you another election special called Talk of the World. We hope to hear from those of you in our worldwide audience about the election of Barack Obama in Europe, Africa, Asia, Latin America. What has changed for you? Guests include Natan Sharansky and Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. That's tomorrow in this hour on an election news special. Throughout his campaign, Barack Obama promised to bring change and hope to America. Both themes played a major role in his first speech as president-elect.
This is our time to put our people back to work and open doors of opportunity for our kids, to restore prosperity and promote the cause of peace, to reclaim the American dream and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many we are one, that while we breathe, we hope, and where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Barack Obama, the next president of the United States, ending his speech last night in Chicago's Grant Park. Many voters cast their ballot for change, so if this is a new beginning, what begins and what ends? Give us a call. Republicans, 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Our guests, both here in Studio 3A, are Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and Andy Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. Andy, did anything surprise you last night?
Well, I was surprised by how well Barack Obama did in personal terms. I mean, the economy shaped to a large extent the Democratic victory. But when the exit polls, poll respondents were asked which candidate has the right judgment, the gap had been at the beginning of the campaign so much in favor of John McCain. In this exit poll, 58% said that about Barack Obama. Only 49% said that about John McCain. Obama not only won the campaign on the issues, but he won it pretty convincingly in terms of the kind of person he was, and in terms of instilling more confidence than John McCain. To a certain extent, you could argue that John McCain may have lost some of the confidence of the American public, but certainly Obama built it.
Let's get to another caller, and let's go to Rich. Rich with us from Little Rock in Arkansas on the Democratic line.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Rich. Go ahead, please.
Just wanted to make a quick comment about the generational term that's been applied to Barack Obama, and want to say amen to that. I'm a charter boomer, and now have college-age son and daughter. And they're responding to Barack Obama the same way that my generation responded to the Kennedys and to Martin Luther King, and particularly his call to service, I think strikes a chord that runs deep in us all, and he's inclusive in that call. And finally, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, a big part of that was of that dream was that the day would come when his children would be judged not by the color of their skin but the content of their character, and this day is historical, I would humbly submit, in that I think that day has come.
Thank you very much for that comment, Rich. It's quite interesting. I wanted to ask Ken Rudin about that. Obviously, we have seen a generational torch being passed. It is the President Bush's father, the 41st president of the United States, the first President Bush, who was the going to be the last president of the United States to serve in the Second World War. It's conceivable that John McCain will be the last major party presidential candidate to have served in the Vietnam War.
And now we have presidents younger than we are, and that scares
terrifying.
The heck out of me. But you know something, that's a very interesting point. I was watching last night, and again, worrying about what counties are going where and who's winning the House seats and being more clinical than emotional. And yet when you watch the tears roll down Jesse Jackson's face and you hear the rhetoric coming out of Barack Obama, which sounded so much like Dr. King, it was just the history, 1960, 1968, just hit you all over again watching
in Grant Park, of all places.
Absolutely, where the Chicago Democratic Convention was.
And the words of Abraham Lincoln and the cadences of Martin Luther King. It was quite interesting. Let's get Jeannie on the line. Jeannie calling us from Kansas City on the Republican line.
Hi.
Hi, Jeannie.
I am calling on the Republican line because I did end up voting for John McCain, but I am one of those people who waited until I had to put my ballot in the mail. We're a military family, so I voted absentee to decide. Two things that I wanted to say. As a Christian, we try to live, my family, we try to teach our kids this, to let no word come out of your mouth but what's going to be profitable for building up one another. And that's been something that's been sorely lacking in this campaign. And just talking to other friends, it breaks my heart when I hear the negativity that we've heard surrounding this campaign. You know, even down in my home state with the Senate campaign that Elizabeth Dole just lost down there.
In North Carolina, yeah.
Yes, yes. And then as a military family member, what we try to tell our children, and I'm a spouse and now I have a 20-year-old son who is in the military, no matter who wins, this person is going to be dad's and now brother's commander-in-chief. And things that you say, strongly negative things beforehand, make it really hard to do that. So, you know, our children don't even know, I mean, if they would ask us directly, I guess we would tell them, but, you know, we've talked to them about the issues, but our children don't even know who we voted for. Anyway, just the negativity, and really wish that could be changed. I don't like seeing that.
Jeannie, Andy, the negativity of this campaign, more and more voters every year say they're turned off by negativity, yet negative campaigning, we're told, continues to work.
Well, it works in some campaigns. It's not altogether clear that McCain's negative campaigning worked. In fact, there was a fair amount of backlash to it. To get to this point of coming together, though, I cannot remember a new president where we haven't had a period where the American public gets behind the new president, at least for some period of time, and gives him a honeymoon. And given the nature of Obama, who he is, where the country is, it's inconceivable to me that Americans, except for a very hardcore group of people opposed to him along partisan lines, will not come together in January, February, and some months into the future with a very positive attitude.
I wonder, there's, and Jeannie, let me try this out on you. There was an aspect of Barack Obama to his campaign where he was running not so much for head of government with policies and positions, he certainly had all of those, but for head of state in those grand appeals to our better angels, to the eloquence that we heard last night. And I wonder, did you hear that as well?
I did. To a certain extent, I'm afraid that in my case, it again came down to, as I said, there's two members in the Aaron family in on active duty, and for me, it came down to national security.
And who you trusted more as commander in chief?
And who I trusted more as commander in chief. But that being said, now our new commander in chief is Barack Obama, and you know I've been praying for him all along, and he will be the one that we pray for now and will honor. And, you know, I'm very excited. And as a Caucasian American, I don't think that I can ever get the intensity of the of what African Americans feel right now, but I felt a bit of that this morning. It is historic, and I'm excited that we've come to a place in our nation where every child can picture himself as president of the United States. And, you know, that's exciting. And I think that as Americans, we have to find those things that we feel in common with whoever the nominee is, whoever the commander-in-chief is, and try to get behind him on that. I think that Senator McCain's speech was incredible, his concession speech. And we need to listen to that, and we need to move forward.
Jeannie, we wish you and your family the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to, let's go to another Republican caller. This is Monique. Monique with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just saying that one of the concerns that I have is the dynamics in terms of race relations, whether they become worse because of the election and the way the election is being spun right now. I have serious concerns, in particular because I am black. I voted for McCain, and based on my values, not necessarily on individuals, but I vote according to the issues and my values. And so what concerns me is I don't watch the mainstream media. I do watch Fox News. But even in watching Fox News constantly, what you see is this constant berating, this constant belittling of African Americans, so much so that it made me feel uncomfortable and I had to turn the TV off. And so I really hope that eventually we can get to a point where we stop the race finger pointing and start looking at issues. Because I do believe that if things had been done differently, there's a possibility that some of the swing votes, including votes like mine, could have easily gone for McCain. But in today's time and in today's age, when you don't want to see divisions and hatred, and I mean, just the even every time they put a black person on Fox News or any other conservative news, they can't speak. They can't articulate points. And so what happens is I get embarrassed and I feel like turn them off, get them off of that radio. They do not represent me or what I consider to be my mainstream. They're nothing like the people that I've been around. And you have other people who are not African American and they're looking saying, see, told you they're just dumb. They just voted for Obama because he's black. When the truth of the matter is a lot of times they're voting a straight Democratic ticket because they're looking at this party that is spewing such hate and such venom, and I don't think that those type of feelings need to be articulated in order to articulate a point in terms of values.
And Andy Cowan, I think Monique raises some interesting points. And any thoughts on any indications from the exit polls yesterday about what this is going to do for race relations in
this
country?
Actually, the question was asked of respondents in the exit poll, if Barack Obama's elected, what will happen to race relations? A small plurality, 47 to I think about 25% of whites said they thought race relations would be better. But African Americans were much more positive. 60% of African Americans thought it would improve race relations. Only 10% said it would worsen them. So there's a lot of hope and expectation that this is will be a good thing.
Monique, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And before we go, we have talked about, obviously, the race for president of the United States and for the United States Senate. Ken, there were 435 seats up yesterday in the House of Representatives.
Yes, and I'm going to list everyone right now. If we have time, do we have time? Some things to mention. In 2006, for example, not one Democratic incumbent was defeated or one Democratic seat went to the Republicans. Yesterday, four Democrats in the House were defeated for reelection. Tim Mahoney, the congressman, the freshman from Florida.
Scandal
who replaced Mark Foley, was defeated.
Scandal tainted.
Don Kazyu in Louisiana had a third-party African-American candidate. He won a special election this year, a Democrat. He lost to a Republican. Nick Lampson, who won the seat that Tom DeLay left in 2006 in Texas, he was defeated too. Chris Shays, the Republican from Connecticut, lost. For the first time in history now, there is not one single Republican member of the House from New England. Never happened before. Republicans lost two House seats in New York State. Now they only have 3 out of 29, the lowest in history. New Yorkers the Republicans lost control of the state Senate for the second time since the 1930s. Pretty much, and William Jefferson, we talk about Ted Stevens leading in Alaska. William Jefferson was renominated in
William Cold Cash Jefferson.
Exactly. The money in the freezer, under indictment, probably go to trial next month, but he was renominated in an overwhelmingly Democratic district, will probably be reelected.
And one question here on email from Davis, California. Celeste, how do you see your influence as the political junkie and the influence of your colleagues on various ends of the political spectrum as having had or not had an effect on the process and outcome of the election?
Well, I mean, I suspect that there are some cable networks that like to preach to the converted. And I think what NPR has tried to do from the beginning is not so much, although we did too much of this, worry about polls and worry about surveys, but really get out and talk to what voters had to say about things. I'm not insulting Andy Cohen. But I mean, we talk about 2 years ago, we were talking about front runners and we talk about who was going to lead before voters even had a chance. And that's crazy. So I think what we had the opportunity to do, and I think we did very well, if I'm not patting ourselves on the back, is that we went out and heard what voters had to say, what they were concerned about, and a lot of what we heard in the last couple of months, I think, was aptly indicated in yesterday's results.
And Andy Cohen, I'm going to give you the last word. I'm going to turn to you and ask, given this election, are we justified to think that this was historic, as so many say, maybe the most important election in our lifetimes?
If you look at the conditions of the country, if you look at the candidates, it would be hard to not think of this. I mean, this is a historic election, clearly. But let's also give some credit to the voters. The process was very long. There was some presumption about who would be the candidates, how this would turn around, media emphasizing those things 22 months ago. None of it turned out to be what happened. The voters made up their minds, and completely differently than we would have expected 22 months ago.
Andy Cohut, thanks as always for being with us. We appreciate it, especially at the end of a very long, not only process, but last 36 hours or so for you. Andy Cohut is director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. You can read his column, The Political Junkie, at npr.org. He also joined us here in Studio 3. Always nice to have you with us, Ken.
Thanks, Neil.
And again, tomorrow, NPR's Talk of the Nation becomes Talk of the World as we get opinions from around the globe on NPR Worldwide. Join us for that broadcast, too. And stay tuned to NPR for the latest developments in those races that are still outstanding. This election isn't over. Not yet. I'm Neil Conan. You've been listening to a day-after-election special from NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Constellation Energy, working to provide responsible, sustainable energy to power America's future. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. From Sit for Less, selling all colors of the Herman Miller Aeron chair online, including Sit for Less True Black, online at sitforless.com. And from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frayne, our technical director, the producer for the afternoon magazine, is Harriet Williamson. Coming up later this afternoon, following the closing market report, we'll take a look at how tax referenda fared in Champaign County. And then I'll talk with Victoria Raystrick of Persons Assuming Control of Their Environment, or PACE. PACE and the Carl Low Vision Clinic are sponsoring a low vision fair. It's set for Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Urbana Civic Center. So I will talk with Victoria Raystrick about what they've got planned for that fair that all is coming up following the closing market report, which gets underway following news from National Public Radio at 1 minute past the hour. Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, mostly sunny, windy, and warm, highs ranging from 70 near Lake Michigan to 78 in the south. Tonight in western Illinois, becoming cloudy with showers and thunderstorms arriving well after midnight. Elsewhere in Illinois, partly cloudy, and in Indiana, clear to partly cloudy. Lows ranging from 46 in eastern Indiana to 56 in western Illinois. Tomorrow in western Illinois, cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere in Illinois, becoming mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms arriving in western Indiana.